So my name is Krupa, and I'm a program manager on the Blend team. And today, I'm going to show you how to build, as the slide says, awesome MetroCell HTML apps using Blend. So, you know, the agenda is very light on slides. You know, I'm more of a demo, Visual Studio, Blend, getting my hands dirty kind of a person. So we'll have some slides that just give you some context as to what Blend and Visual Studio is. And then we'll just spend most of our time just building applications, you know, starting with something very simple, and then going more complex and something more involved. And then if there's more time remaining, you know, we'll do some other interesting things, namely around designing for devices. And I'll also have a Q&A session at the end as well. Normally, you know, I like to keep it very informal. So if you have any questions, you know, feel free to raise your hand. I don't know how well that'll work in a room this big, but I'm always up for trying it out. So let's give it a shot and see how it works. And if it doesn't, we'll continue on from there. So quickly, you know, how many of you here have used Blend before? All right. And how many of you have used Blend for building HTML applications? All right, excellent. That's what I like to see. You know, at least all of you have context on what Blend is. And hopefully after this, you guys will just be excited to go out and build HTML-style apps using it. So at a very high level, and if you were to ask me what is Blend, you know, you have Visual Studio and you have Blend, what are they about? The way I look at it is this. You know, Blend optimizes for visual design tasks. And its center of gravity, what it's comfortable with, is really doing visual design. And Visual Studio is really optimized for coding and debugging. You can write code in Blend, you can do some design in Visual Studio, but really, you know, they're both out of their comfort zone. So the way I look at it, just, you know, keep Blend for visual design and Visual Studio for coding and debugging. And as I'll show in my demo, the workflow between them is absolutely fantastic, and I'll highlight that, you know, every chance I can get. So to go more into detail on what Blend is, the way I look at it is Blend is a professional design tool for building applications visually. Or more specifically, you know, many of you may have used Blend for building Silverlight apps, WPF apps, and Windows Phone apps. And of course, more recently, we also have flavors of Blend for MetroCell, XAML, and HTML. For this particular talk, I'm going to be focusing only on the HTML side of things. So I said that Blend is a professional design tool for building your Metro-style HTML applications visually. So I underlined professional design tool, and I did it mainly because it's important to know what that is, because that sets your expectation just right when you're actually using Blend. With a professional design tool like Blend, the expectation is that you know HTML and CSS. If you do not know HTML and CSS, Blend is still a great tool for learning how to, you know, get started, but you'll be most productive if you actually know how to style content, how to add markup, how to just work with the various things that make HTML5 really kick. And given that, what Blend does is we give you as much detail or as little detail as you want. You know, we don't abstract away details for you. We give you all the gory, you know, information right in your face for you. And really, the high level is we allow you to focus on the concepts and not the syntax. So you don't have to worry about where the semicolon goes, where the, you know, what the hex code for yellow is. And as you'll see, we try to make that a little bit easier for you as you're going on. So with that, you know, I'm done with my slides for now. So let's go ahead and just get started by building a simple app, a Hello World app. And the focus is really on just using Blend more than what the demo itself is about. So I have a blank project here. And first of all, what you see is this. You know, you see the bulk of our area, the bulk of our real estate, is spent in what's known as the artboard or the design surface. Here's where you can visually, you know, design your application, select and interact with everything as it's going on. The other part of it is the two panels on the right, the HTML attributes panel and the CSS properties panel, where we give you a categorized listing of every single attribute, every single CSS property that you have both in HTML5 and CSS3. And I'll show you, you know, as we go along how this all works. And then the rest of it is, you know, the bottom, we give you, you know, easy access to your markup. You know, one of the big things about visual design tools, you know, partly due to Microsoft's own doing, is that most people don't trust visual design tools. They don't trust the markup generated by it. They feel that, you know, if I'm not writing the markup myself, the tool is going to do something that I don't like. And we work very hard in the Blend team to try to avoid that. And as a way of just gaining your trust, we actually show you every, you know, every step of the way, both the HTML and the CSS being modified. And, you know, you'll see it very shortly as well. So Hello World, Hello World. So let's go and get started. So what I want to do is this. I want to display Hello World. And in HTML, you have many ways of doing that. I'm just going to go ahead and launch the Assets panel, which is basically a categorized listing of every single thing you have in your project. We give you all the controls, along with every HTML5 element that you might be interested in as well. So I'm going to go and use a heading tag, H1. I'm going to go and drop it in. And notice what happens. The moment I drop it into my DOM, I immediately get feedback. I immediately see my H1 tag as displayed in the application. And you can also see in the markup, you know, you see H1 displayed right here. So I'm going to go in and make it Hello World. Hello comma, world. So, you know, at a very basic level, that's it. You know, that's how easy it is to just type in hello world on your artboard and get it up and running. But there's a little more to it as well, though. There's more to Blend than just HTML. And as you can tell, there's a lot of empty space here. I mean, the hello world text looks very lonely in this really, really large artboard. And here's where the audience participation comes in. So what I'd like to do is make this text really large. And what I need all of your help on is figuring out how large it should be. So first of all, I'm just going to go ahead and create a style rule that targets Hello World. I'm going to go ahead and go to my style rules panel, which is basically a tree view of all the style sheets and all the rules inside of it. Let's create a style rule. And I'm going to select selector, and I'm just going to type in H1. And notice once I've done that, you know, we go to default.css, and the selector has been selected for you. And now we can go ahead and specify the size of an element, which, you know, in HTML is done by using CSS. So all right, what size should I make the font for this Hello World text? Someone shout out really loud. Anybody? 48. I heard 48. Let's try that. 48 pixels. Enter. Oh, we went smaller. No, I think we should go the other way. Anyone else? Something. Pardon me? 100. 100. Okay, we're getting better. You know, we have a lot more space left. Let's just, you know, jump by, you know, hundreds. 200 pixels. No. Let's do 400. You know, I'm getting nervous here. Okay, that's too large. It's a 350. All right, this looks just right. But notice what I was able to do here. I was able to visually just specify 250 pixels, and immediately, instantaneously, I was able to get feedback on how large everything is going. And of course, you can see in our CSS, you know, CSS code editor that we actually take care of putting the font size for you and then put the pixel value right next to it as well. So, all right, we have it made larger. And let's go and change the color of it as well. You know, it's a pretty sunny day outside, so I'm going to go and go for a nice yellow color. And immediately, you know, I specify my yellow color in the various value editors we have. And notice that we provide the hex code for you. And to emphasize what I talked about earlier, right, we all have to focus on the concepts and the syntax. You know, the way I think about color is in terms of yellow. I don't really think about it in terms of FFD900. So you'll find that we provide a lot of visual tools to basically allow you to solve a problem in the problem space you're actually in. So when you're dealing with color, you know, we want to think about solving in terms of color. And throughout my demo, you'll see other versions of it. So have Hello World. Let me hit F5 just to show you that it does, in fact, run. And it is building. And there you have Hello World. You might be wondering why it's taking up two lines, showing up in one line on my actual, when I hit F5 and not my design surface. And I'll show you that later, but just to give you a preview, you can actually preview the resolution you're actually running your application in. And right now I'm at 1366 by 768. If I do what my laptop is actually running natively at, you'll sort of see, sorry, wrong one. Yes, you'll see that, you know, you can actually see that real time as well. And I will, you know, it's more of a teaser. I'll get to the details of it very shortly. So that's essentially Hello World. And if there are no more questions, I'd like to go to a more involved example, something that actually, you know, shows off the power of what Blend is, because this demo really isn't particularly anything to write home about, because you could do this in Notepad, and if you start off using like FrontPage Express or Netscape Composer many, many years ago as part of like, you know, free install of your browser, you could have done all of this already then as well. So there's nothing really metro about it. So I'd like to quickly, you know, put a stop to this and start with the metro example. All right, let's go on. So let me first show you the project I'm going to build, and then let's hope that I can get to it, you know, in during the demo. So the app I'm going to build is pretty simple. So it's loading. All right. So the app is called Swagwatch. Think of it as a play of the word swag and swatch, so you put them together in a very creative way and call it Swagwatch. It took us all week to figure the name out. And the app is very simple. It's essentially a list view, a collection of shirt images. And what I have is I also provide like some overlay with some text in it. I just noticed that there's a little animation here when I hover over the logo. And if I check on that, you can see a different style for the check mark applied and all of that. And notice some of the colors. It's a little gradient and a background image and all of that. And what I'm going to show is just how to use Blend to build this entire application from scratch. And some of the things you will learn along the way are, you know, how to lay controls out, how to work with styles, and then how to actually do data binding, how to take data and visualize it and start getting something that, you know, looks a little bit more like a Metro Cell app that you might want to build. So let's get started. So I'm going to go ahead and go to new project. Let's go to create a blank app. So the Blank app is mostly completely blank, except for this content goes here text, which I'm going to go ahead and delete. And what I want to do is just, the designer I work with on this project, you know, gave me some images and some various assets to add. So I'm going to go ahead and just add it to my project right now. It's in my desktop. They're essentially images. I'm going to copy and paste them in. So we have a projects panel, just like in Visual Studio. So if you are familiar with the tree-like view for being able to browse all your references and being able to add and modify your projects, we have the exact same thing. So that way you can get up and running very quickly with that. So what I want to do first is, there are many ways you can start your application. You can start your application by doing data first, but the way I like to work on it is by, you know, I have a blank canvas right now, and that always makes me nervous. I don't like seeing something blank for a long period of time. So I'm going to add some easy things first, add the logo and the background image, just to visually orient my application in a way that I can start working with it from there on. So what I want to do is just go ahead and insert the image. I'm just going to double-click on the logo, and notice once I do that, immediately we add the image tag with the appropriate markup and the path to the image as it directly is. So here's our logo, SwagWatch. So what I want to do next is specify the background image. And this is pretty interesting because, and I'll call it shortly, you know, we made some improvements in this area, so if you find yourself like, you know, just squirming uncomfortably at what I'm going to do, be assured that, you know, the next time you see another version of Blend, you will have a much better experience. So what I want to do is I want to style my body tag to have a background image. So by default, you know, default.css includes a selector already created for me, so I'm not going to do anything special. I'm just going to select my body element, go to CSS properties panel, and then specify the body tag directly. I'm going to go to background. What I want to do is specify a background image, so I'm going to specify from the dropdown, background.png. This is one of the images I actually added to my project earlier. So once I've done that, you can immediately see background.png has been added, and you can see the exact syntax that we added for you automatically as well. And you can quickly see some problems as I've done this, because, you know, the background image, you know, the gradient, it's showing up, but there's some problems here. It's, you know, it ends abruptly. It doesn't quite look all that nice. So what I want to do is actually align it to the bottom to actually show it, you know, the bottom of this area. And the way you do that in CSS is by setting the position Y property. And I'm going to type in the word bottom. So this is one of the things that I wanted to mention that we made improvements on. You don't have to type in bottom in the future. And the next thing, so now it's bottom aligned, but another problem has cropped up. It's repeating. It is actually looping, and it doesn't quite look all that nice. So I'm going to go and type in no repeat for the no repeat property. And notice that immediately, you get immediate feedback that, you know, the looping was there, but now it's no longer there. So, you know, very quickly you can see both the CSS, and in design time you can see the actual representation of the app as it goes on. So the last thing I'm going to do is simple. You know, this looks kind of odd. The background of the actual application, it's a darker shade of gray than the background that it is here. So I can do one of two things. I can set a solid background color and just say, this is going to be gray. But, you know, a solid background color is cool, but with CSS 3, you have gradients, and we have great gradient support to make this work. So what I'm going to do is just clear this out, actually, and add a background layer and say, I'm going to add a gradient. And what I want to do here is make this black as well and change the gradient stuff for this one to be the same shade of gray as what you had before. And move it a little further up. And then perfect. So now you have a gradient, you have some black color. And then, you know, you can already see your application is starting to look much nicer. You know, it before it was completely blank, and within a few minutes, you're able to get up and running with something that looks a little bit more and less like the application that you want. So next up is the fun part. It's actually adding the data. So you have several controls that you can use to work with data. You know, what we support is on all the controls that you have in Windows that give you the exact look and feel of many of the MetroCell apps that you have. And the control I'm going to use this time is List View. And it's a very popular control that many of the templates use as well for essentially visualizing large amounts of data and grouping them and categorizing them in interesting ways. So I'm going to go ahead and just insert it into my document. And here's your List View control. You know, it doesn't quite have all the pizzazz as you might have seen in the final application. And the reason is that the control only works with data. It really, you know, it really feeds on data, and without it, it really doesn't do much. And the way you specify data is, you know, in JavaScript. And what I'm going to do is, I could do this in Blend, but like I mentioned before, you know, we have great interoperability with Visual Studio, so there's no point why we should use Blend for it when I can just open up Visual Studio and just make the change there itself. Okay, I have two instances. Okay, here we go. So I'm going to go and open a JS file. And you can see the exact code, you know, that is already provided for me by the template. I'm just going to copy and paste some code in. I will talk about the code I'm pasting in as well. So, okay, let's paste this in here. And all I'm really doing is declaring an object that has properties, you know, an array of objects that contain properties, you know, namely color, color text, and shirt. And you'll, you know, just keep in mind the name for color, because that's the first one I'm going to use shortly. But I will come back to the data as I use more and more of it. And all I do at the very end is just wrap the data into a binding list object, just so that my app knows, or the list view actually knows, what to actually do with the data once it gets it. So I'm going to go ahead and save it and go back to Blend. And if I were to just open up the JS file in Blend, notice that, see a JavaScript editor, the exact same data I added in Visual Studio is shown here as well. So the interoperability between them is pretty cool. So what I'm going to do is now is associate this data with the list view that I have. So I'm going to go ahead and select my list view. I'm going to go to HTML attributes panel, where among many things, I can also modify all the properties the control exposes. So if you've been familiar with how you do data binding in XAML, it's very similar in HTML as well, at least in the way Blend exposes it. So the way you specify is I have an item data source property, and what I'm going to do is just type in the name of my data source. So it's, I think it's called list view data. Is it list view data source or just list view? I'll just copy it. List view data dot data source. And once I hit enter, you'll immediately see the data starting to appear. It doesn't look pretty. It doesn't look pretty at all. But at least it gives me an idea that the data is being recognized by the control. And I can see a list of it. And I can actually see individual items as I'm hovering over all of this. How many of you are familiar with data binding in XAML, actually, before I continue on? OK, most of you. So as most of you know, getting data into a control is only one part of visualizing it. The other part is actually using a template. You need a template to actually make your data look like something you actually want to show. Otherwise, you'll just see what you're seeing right now, which is not a very friendly collection of text. And I'm going to just go ahead and say, create new template from the item template property. And you can go and create a template. I'm going to identify this by a class and call this one color template. And once I do this, you know, if you were to say that this is not much of an improvement over what you had before, I would not completely disagree with you. But a nice thing is, though, once I create a template, at least I'm visualizing the object as an object itself, as opposed to raw strings. And from here on out, I can actually start modifying it to look nice. So I have my object selected. And just like all templates go, you know, the template gets repeated over and over again for every piece of data that I have. So you can see the markup being highlighted right here. The first thing I'm going to do is just size it correctly. You know, right now, the object is very small. It needs to be made a little bit larger. So what I'm going to do is select the parent container and just, you know, start styling it. And the way I'm going to do it is by giving it a class value and then styling it based on a selector that targets that particular class. So I'm going to right-click, say Add New Class. And let's call this one color container. And because whenever you add a class, the next step you're probably going to do is create a style rule that targets it. We have a little checkbox right here. It says create style rule targeting this class. I'm going to go ahead and hit OK on that one. And once I've done that, notice that you now have the class value, class color container, added to your project. But you also have an empty style rule created for you as well. And now I can just do what I've done before, which is start using the CSS properties panel and sizing it. So first of all, what I want to do is make the width and height of it, you know, more reasonable. So height is going to be, you know, 266 pixels. These aren't arbitrary values. The images I'm going to be adding are the exact same size, so I'm going to use the exact same value. So I can either search for it like I've been doing right now. So I'm just going to type in width and type in 260 pixels. But, you know, you can also browse through the categories and set the properties as you want. It all depends on how you prefer to work. I'm going to hit refresh. And now you'll see that you have discrete objects now. You have discrete objects with their appropriate size for what you want. And while I'm here, let me just, you know, this doesn't look quite as friendly as I would like, so I'm going to go ahead and put a background color on it just so I can visualize it better. Let's make it yellow again. All right. So now you can see that we have data, we have some colors. If I were to hit F5 just to show you where we are right now, you'll see this. It's building. Have your control, I can scroll left and right, and, you know, this is really cool. So one of the things that's kind of, you know, awkward about this is that the list view is only taking up a small amount of my space. You know, I have a lot more visual data to work with, so what I really want to do is actually make it go a little larger. So by default, all the styles that a list view uses, all the controls that are provided by Windows, actually are defined in UIDark.css, which is provided by the framework itself. It's a read-only style rule that contains all the out-of-the-box look and feel that you would want, so you don't have to do anything extra to, you know, emulate the Windows Metro style if you don't want to do anything extra. But what I want to do in this case is I want to override it. I want to override the default sizing to be more specific to my application because I do have more space. So what I'm going to do is just going to say create star rule from element class, and when list view and when swipeable have already been defined for me. I'm going to say I want to create another star rule based on when list view, and what this is going to do is create a copy of that particular selector and put in default.css, which according to Cascade is going to take priority now, so I can actually style it and not have to worry about the Windows default sizing kicking in. So I'm going to go and specify the height. Let's call this one 85%. That's a little too large. You can see it's actually crossing over the application, 80%. All right, so now we have two rows of content. So at a very basic level, we have our data showing up. We have it sort of looking like what we want in the final version. But none of the data that they find here, none of the data that is actually provided here, is actually being used. So the first thing I'm going to do, and which is probably the most visually appealing part of it as well, because you get really cool instant feedback, is have my background color not be the solid yellow color that I have, but instead actually be the color from the data source that is currently powering it. The data context for it is all the various objects that are defined here. So I'm going to select my list view again, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to go ahead and go to background color area and specify a data binding. So I'm going to say create data binding, and I'm going to type in the name of the property that defines the color, which in this case is conveniently called just color. And I'm going to hit OK. And once I hit OK, notice that immediately the colors from my data source are actually being shown. The exact values for each object are now being shown in the color that they're actually being defined in. So I'm going to go and delete the object that we have there. So all the next thing is just to get my shirts in. So I'm going to go back to my projects panel. I'm just going to double-click on shirt. And the shirt immediately appears. So in the past, when I've given this demo, one of the questions was like, how does that even work? Like, how is a shirt showing up? The shirt is actually, it's not, I wish I had a more clever solution, but it's actually a PNG with the body of the shirt transparent. So it's essentially a stencil. If you've been to a Visual Studio booth any time in the past few weeks, the stickers we give you, it's exactly the same thing. You just put it on something else, the background seeps through. And so that's how it works. So yeah, I wish I had a clever way of doing it, but this works. And if anyone tells you, though, tell them it's a very complicated SVG example with a lot of complex paths that are being defined. So I have my shirt, and everything looks cool so far. And one of the things my demo also had was I had some text, the text that showed what the color of the shirt actually was. And the reason I put that text in there is if you work in XAML, layout is a whole different thing in HTML. In fact, I would say it borders on being painful. So what we've done in Microsoft in general is you can lay out stuff in the normal way, the normal HTML4 way, for example, but we also give you great support for the grid control, for the grid layout model. So you can actually lay things out in a more sensible way, a way that makes application development that much more easy. So I'm going to go ahead and select my the div, the parent container, and I'm going to go ahead and say I want to make this into a grid. And unlike XAML, we have an actual grid control. The way you specify grid in HTML5 is by setting a display property on the CSS to say I want it to be laying its content out as a grid. So I'm just going to find the grid category itself. Sorry, the display property, and set it to be MS grid. And once you've done that, you don't hear great music playing or anything like that. But what you do gain is the ability to specify rows and columns directly to specify your grid. So I'm going to go ahead and first break this grid up into two rows. So I'm going to be inserting a row right here. And the shirts shrunk, and the reason is that when you convert an existing container into a grid, the content inside has to decide, do I want to be part of my original layout or be part of the new layout that I got created? And by default, the way the HTML5 works is it goes into whatever it was initially. And we'll fix that shortly, so I'll get to that next. So I have my shirt, and I want to display some text inside of it. And that's as easy as just dragging and dropping it in into my grid. Just dragging and dropping it in. I use an H2 tag. You see H2 being displayed here. So let me go ahead and select it. Right now, the H2 tag is here. And I spent a lot of time talking about colors and talking about some of the bigger items. But a lot of what you do in CSS, a lot of what you do, especially if you're working with a designer who gives you very specific feedback on how things should be laid out, is by setting the margin and padding, setting the minor visual details that really make a UI element feel like it's part of the page. So first of all, my H2 tag has some issues. It is showing the top left corner, and it's not really, I want to vertically center it. I want to give it some space, give it some breathing room. So I'm going to go and search for the padding property on it. And what I'm actually going to do is I did not create a class rule for this, so I can actually set inline and say I want this all to go inline and have it show up inline if I want to. put out 6 pixels and make this 4 pixels if I want. Sorry. And 4 pixels. But in general, though, you know, it depends on what your style of working is. I generally don't like inline styles. I just find them harder to maintain. So what I'm going to do is actually just clear these out and create a new style rule. Go to my style rules panel. Create a new property. Add a style rule. Actually, let me give my H2 tag a class value. I forgot to do that. Let's call this one color text. And just like before, I'm going to say create a style rule targeting this class. And there. So I specify some of my padding values here. So I'm going to show you how I can just copy it directly from my markup if I want to. I just paste it here. And if I were to go to my color text default style, you can see that 4 pixels was displayed here. So if you feel comfortable doing things in markup, you can definitely do that. And we will just make sure you're in sync in your UI. And I'm going to specify the top part, you know, using the visual editor itself, and just make it 6 pixels. And so there you have, you know, 2 ways of specifying the padding, one by in markup and one by just specifying it in the tool. 6 is not enough. Make it 8. All right. So now I have my text showing up in the way I want to. But next up, the text is, you know, showing H2. And what I really want to do is give it the value of color text. You know, you could also say that, you know, the value between color text and color is identical, so why not use color? You know, that's a fair point. You know, I had high hopes for having something more clever appear here, but I just never got around to it, so I'm going to use color text for now, and knowing full well that I could just use color as well if I wanted to. So, have my H2 element selected. Let me go ahead and do create data binding. And just like before, just type in the name of the property that each of these objects are, you know, bound to in many ways. So color text, notice that the color of our item appears. And the last thing I'm going to do is the shirt, it is scrunched. Let's go and fix that. I'll give my shirt a class value as well. Add new class. Call this just color shirt. And specify create a style rule targeting this class. And this is kind of interesting. The way you make something span across multiple rows is by setting a CSS property. There's a property called, you know, MS Grid Row Span, which specifies how many rows your content takes up. And I'm going to go into grid area and just type in MS Grid Row Span and type in 2. And once I've done that, you'll immediately see that the shirt crosses across both areas. And, you know, I give a background in my example for the actual H2 tag. Let me just go and do that right now just to be complete in how it looks. Give it a background, and give it like an opacity. Let's give it like 85% so it seeps through a little bit. Let's make it dark. All right, so now you pretty much have an example of the application I showed earlier. I'm going to hit F5 just to give you an idea of what's going on. So it's building. All right, so you see your shirt, you see all the same shirts being shown. And one of the things I haven't done yet, you know, I haven't changed the exact shirt to be a unique for each one. I'll get to that shortly. It's a very simple thing to do, so I'm not going to focus on that right now. So one of the things I showed that I did is that I actually modified the state that your application looks when you check it. So right now when I check it, the default style, the default look you get from the list view control is a small check mark with the purple border that appears right here. And what I really want to do is I want to make it different. I want to make the check mark really large, so it's really, you know, very prominent that, you know, something has been selected. So, and this is one of those states that's interesting because the way you get into that state is by actually checking, by right-clicking, you know, using your mouse on an element, or by, you know, if you have a touch device, pressing and holding. That's a state that is very hard for me to get to at design time. So one of the things is that, you know, right now I checked the shirts in my application, exited the app, and I'm now in Blend again. You'll see that the check mark state is not being preserved. And in HTML5 especially, a lot of your application state, a lot of the visuals you see, are really generated by JavaScript. You have to navigate into your application. You have to get your application into a state that makes it actually designable. And the traditional model of hitting F5 and getting to a state, you know, today how we do it with like web browser, for example, is you preview in your browser, launch Firebug, launch any of the developer toolbars, make the change, look at the inspected CSS, copy it back in your document. And that workflow works in certain ways, but it's not predictable, it doesn't scale, and it's very error prone. So what we did is we felt that instead of inventing our own way, instead of inventing, you know, our own way of saying, here's how you should build your application to make it actually be designable, we said, use whatever approach you want. Because we're actually running your entire application on a version of IE that your actual runtime apps are running, we can actually run your application inside Blend itself. So we have this thing called interactive mode. I'm just going into it right now. And I'm seeing the donut, which, all right, it works. So you can see your app now, and I'm still inside Blend, but instead of what you saw before, where a click would be like, you know, actually selecting an element and seeing the CSS styles and all of that, I'm actually interacting with my application itself. So I'm going to style around here, I'm going to right-click, you know, get into check state, and I'm going to go and exit interactive mode. And once I've done this, notice what we'll see. Your application is in the exact state I left it in earlier, and I can select, I can style, I can see all the various content that makes it up. So for example, and if I check my check mark right here, you'll see that, you know, in our live DOM, we give you every single instance of an item that is shown on your tree, and you'll see it's actually dynamically generated. It is created entirely by JavaScript. So even if I did not have interactive mode, I'd have had no way of knowing that this is the element that gets added to my DOM. This is the element that's actually responsible for showing it the way it is. So now that I am in this state, I can easily just select it and say, okay, it's called, the class value is win selection checkmark. It's defined in uidark.css, so clearly read-only. I can't do anything about it. So I'm going to go ahead and create a copy of it for my own use. So create style rule for element class, win selection checkmark. And immediately, you'll see that I have a style rule created in default.css. And now that I'm here, I'm going to say font size. As you'll see shortly, a lot of the you know, UI in Windows is defined in like a font file, so you can actually, you know, make it larger. You get a lot of advantages from doing that. So I'm going to make this larger. Let's make this 150 pixels. 150 pixels. All right. So now if I were to, you know, so, you know, before I was hitting F5, it was really just a formality. You know, I really did not have to hit F5 because I know at design time what I'm seeing here is exactly what I see at runtime. But old habits die hard, so I'm going to hit F5 anyway. And just show you that what I'm showing you here in interactive mode got applied to your project, and at runtime, your application shows the exact same state. And notice that there was no guesswork involved. There was no me trying to say, okay, here's the selection. Let me go ahead and add the size, preview it, see if the size is good, and come back. There's no rinse and repeat. It was just basically, I know what size I exactly want because at design time, the exact size I wanted was specified. So it's very predictable in what I was doing. So the last thing I'm going to do is, like I mentioned, you know, the shirts are all the same. And I'm going to go ahead and just add some shirts to my project, copy this folder, paste it in. And if you look at my data source again, you see that I have a, it's asking me to reload. I have a shirt property that essentially is the path of the shirts that I have. And coincidentally, I just happened to name the folder of the shirts that I added to be shirt as well. I'm going to go ahead and select my shirt. And notice that before, when I inserted my images, I always double-clicked and just had them automatically inserted for you. But if you want more precise control over how your images look, you know, you can see you have the source attribute as well. And by default, you can see images shirt.png selected. I'm going to go ahead and just say create data binding and call this one shirt. And immediately you can see the shirt that appears around it. And, you know, instant feedback. And we also give you the classic Blend, you know, orange, yellow color that indicates that data binding has been applied. So you can very quickly just scan your list of attributes and say, okay, which elements have been defined, you know, inline the markup, which have been defined dynamically by JavaScript. This blue color indicates that's been defined by JavaScript, and which have been done by binding. So at a quick glance, you can inspect your entire tree if you want and know what needs to be, you know, modified in code, what needs to be modified in CSS, or what needs to just be modified in HTML directly. So there you have it, a very quick overview of how this particular example works in being able to create a list view example. So are there any questions so far? Because I know I covered a lot of ground very quickly. So any questions? All right. OK, question. That is a good question. The question was, how do you capture the hover states when you're in interactive mode? And that you cannot do right now. The challenge is that I can see the hover. But if we were to escape out of interactive mode, you lose the ability to actually see it at design. Sorry, I'm not in interactive mode right now, but it doesn't work right now. So essentially what you have to do is go to your style rules panel, define it manually, you know, create a style rule, add the colon hover, and then preview it the old-fashioned way. But we're working on it. We're working on it. It's a known limitation. So I was hoping no one was going to ask that question, actually. I was like, you know, there are certain questions I prepare for. I'm like, I need a politically correct answer for some of these things, and that was one of them. So congratulations. All right. So I'm going to go to my next topic then. So I talked a lot about how to... Let me launch the PowerPoint. Okay. You talked about, you know, layout, data, control editing, and styling. But really, a large part of what you do with metro-style apps, what really makes them interesting is that they're not like the apps you built in the past. They're not like your Silverlight apps, your WPF apps. They're different in that they're targeted for devices. You know, at a very obvious, you know, distinction is that when you're focusing on devices, your app can run on a tablet, a laptop, or a TV big screen, like, you know, a projector, for example, a really big one. And the obvious characteristic from that is, you know, you have a small screen, a medium screen, a large screen. So your application needs to, you know, somehow work well across all of them. Because, you know, metro-style apps are full screen. They're not, you know, in a windowed environment. So next up, if that doesn't, you know, that probably doesn't, you know, shake you in fear, you have different orientations. Your device can be viewed in landscape and portrait. You know, I'm running my app on a laptop right now, and no matter how hard I try, my laptop will never switch into a portrait mode. But, you know, with tablets, you know, the Surface tablet we announced, for example, you can, you know, rotate it. You can view your application across landscape and portrait. You're probably going, well, I do phone development. And you're like, yeah, I can totally take care of this. So, you know, good for you. And next up, if that, you know, but you couldn't do this before with your phone. You also have additional things to take care of. You have to, your application can work in full screen. It can work in what's known as a snap view, where your application is taking up a small portion of your area. Or the filled mode, where it can actually take up a lot more of your area, but not quite the full screen. You know, let's say imagine a case where you have an email app running as, you know, your focus app, and then your snapped app is like a music player. And you can design an app, and people will put your application into the state. So you need to design for it. And one of the challenges is also is DPIs and different resolutions. You know, because traditionally, as we've all known, is that you have a fixed device, you're upping the resolution, and the smiley face gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So can anyone tell me what a problem is with this approach? What is the problem with metro-style apps as the UI gets smaller and smaller? Exactly. The mouse is a perfect, you know, it's a very precise, very perfect device for, you know, getting you to click on very small piece of UI. Your fingers are not quite the same. You know, no matter how hard you try, there's a finite point where you can no longer click on UI predictably. You can no longer be sure you're going to make it work. And so what Windows does is it actually has some logic built in to automatically zoom your UI if it detects that you're no longer going to be successful using a touch device. So you have to take into account, okay, so what is my UI going to look like when this particular mode has been set? When someone's viewing my application on a very high resolution, yet on a very small screen, where the DPS can be very large, you know, how am I going to predictably design against it? So one solution, you know, one that will make, you know, Microsoft very happy is you buy many, many Surface devices and you try, you know, all these various orientations. But that's a very time-consuming and expensive process. So one thing that we provide in Blend, and I gave you a quick teaser of it earlier, is we give you what's known as a device panel. So I'm going to first show you the project that I'm going to be, you know, showing. So I built this app for the phone, and, you know, it's one of my... Let's let it load first. For some reason, back in the day, it has crazy idea that people loved wasting their battery by watching cool visualizations. So I have this application called Mood Lamp, and let me show you what it does. It, you know, I love lava lamps, and I can stare at them for hours. So, you know, I created, like, what's the best way to do that on a phone? You know, just have, like, little circles move around. So you have, like, circles moving in, like, a circular pattern. You can move them randomly. And understandably so, you know, it kills your battery, by the way. So it did not do quite as well as I'd hoped. But it does survive on as demo material. You know, it's like, you know, has a second career as being able to show what not to do and then how to do it correctly. So here's my app, and it's designed for the phone. So it has certain things that it does well, but when it comes to devices, like I showed you earlier, there are a lot more things to worry about than this orientation, and this app does not do quite as well. So what I'm going to do is, instead of you having to, you know, rotate your device and try to make it look right, we put a device panel. I gave you a quick sneak preview of it earlier. We can very quickly show you what your app looks like across all the various modes. So right now you're in landscape, full screen, you know, 1366 by 768, which is the default recommended minimum resolution your app should be targeted to work on. So I'm going to go to filled, and very immediately you can see that, okay, I'm in filled mode. You know, this looks kind of still cool, but the logo is obviously too large. You know, that's not going to work too well. I'm going to snap. And here it's even worse. You know, the logo is, again, way too large, and the UI is probably, you know, it's hidden. I can't really click on everything I want. I'm going to portrait. And this is, you know, there's very little good things to say about this particular one, because you can see that the logo is still large, but now the usability of the app is affected. You know, half the, at least a third of the UI is like clipped, and I can't even see what's going on. So what we want to do is we want to fix it. You know, we want to make sure that we want to have your app look good across all these things, because, you know, people will put your app into those modes, and you want to make sure you work in them. But notice that how very quickly I was able to just click, you know, these four buttons and do something that would have otherwise taken a lot of time, taken a lot of effort to do right. So let's go and get started. So when it comes to changing layout, there are several ways you can do this. One way is by using media queries. You know, that's the way you had before in HTML today. But we have some special, you know, media query selectors for being able to target these particular modes. And the limitation of media queries is that they're CSS. So there's certain things you really want to do that you just might not be able to do specifying just CSS. So the other way is by using JavaScript. You can actually listen to the events that subscribe to these various modes and then have it work. So what I'm going to do is show you both approaches. I'm going to show you first the JavaScript approach, and I'm going to show you how to change the logo to make it look smaller, you know, depending on which of the various states I'm in. Let's go to my projects panel and make sure I have the images properly specified. I have mood lamp large, medium, and small. Okay, good. So just, you know, in interest of time, I already had some JavaScript defined already. I will talk about what it does. I'm going to go ahead and close, comment this code out. And what I'm doing here is doing something that most of you who've done HTML development have done many a time, which is add an event handler that listens to the resize event. Pretty straightforward. But then once we go one level below that, when a resize event has happened, we actually listen to a Windows, you know, API value, the Windows UI view management application view, that value, and I store it in view state. And of course I have my logo specified by using the, you know, by the hashtag. My logo is an ID of logo image, so I use the query syntax to specify what it does. And so what I'm doing here is, depending on which view state I'm in, depending on what the, you know, value of this, you know, variable is, I change the logo to something else. So in this case, if I'm in snapped, where it's a very small view on the left-hand side, I show the small logo. If I'm in full screen, I show the large logo. And, you know, everything else is logo medium. You know, there's documentation on this all online, so I didn't actually have to guess in trial and error what happened. So I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, make this, let me go back to just full screen. And let me refresh my page to make sure the JavaScript is actually loaded. So here's my application, just like before. It's going to filled. And notice once I've done that this time, the logo size became smaller. And I can also make sure that it did that by just hovering, like going to the, let's go to the source property. I can quickly see here that this value has changed from what it originally was. So you can see that the blue color shown here. I'm going to snap. And, you know, you can see the logo got smaller. There are some other layout issues that are wrong with it, but at least you can see that the image has changed color. And what has happened is, you know, this portrait mode still has issues, but the logo has gotten smaller as well. But the thing that I really want to emphasize is I spoke briefly about how what you're seeing on the design surface is not just like an emulation. It's not like a rendering of, you know, something that happened, you know, moments earlier. It's a live version of your application. I mean, it's the closest thing to, you know, operating on your application while it's still, you know, moving around. So that extends also to code, also extends to everything that happens under the hood. So when you're changing from filled to viewed to snapped, we're not just, you know, resizing the UI for you. We're actually toggling the internal state of all the APIs that you rely on to give you what you're looking for. So for this case, even though I'm not running in Metro, I'm running on my classic desktop, even though I am, you know, not in a pure Metro environment, using Blend to toggle from the various view states actually changes the Windows API. So if you have code that listens for it, you know, any of the various APIs, you can reliably know that what you're going to see in Blend is exactly what you see at runtime. So I'm going to hit F5 and just try to get it to snap and show you what it looks like there. And it should be identical. In fact, I know it's identical because I, you know, when I ran through it earlier, it looked the same. I'm going to snap it here. Notice exactly, it's the exact same, you know, the issue we saw earlier, the logo is small, layout is wrong. So this is really, yes. All right, so now let's talk about the next part of it. Now, I mentioned there are two ways of fixing your layout. One way is by essentially specifying things in code. The other way is by using CSS. So I'm going to go to my style rules panel. And what I'm going to do is, so let's look at what's the problem with the layout here. I have my element. I'm going to go ahead and select my fragment. And notice we have a grid specified. And the grid in all of these pages is actually, you know, most of the fractional values, which is good. But the center column is actually a pixel size, which I really don't want because, you know, if I'm designing for a fixed screen size, like on the phone where I just have like an 800 by 480 screen, there's no problem with having a fixed pixel size because I know that no matter what people do, your screen will always be the same size. But as you saw right now, in an area where, in a world where screen size is variable, you don't want that. So what I'm going to do is, this looks fine for this particular view. Let's go and go into the filled view and try to fix it a little bit more. Like, for example, the spacing here is a little off. So one naive way of doing this is by saying, okay, I'm in filled view, and this grid needs to be resized a bit. There's way too much space. It's not centered correctly. Let's start moving it up like this. And so this is good. But the downside is that if I were to do something like that, and I were to go back to my main view again, you know, because I did not say when this should be applied, it applies it globally everywhere. So while it might look good in filled, it doesn't look good in my default view. So let me go ahead and just, you know, move it back down to something more reasonable. And that's where media queries come in. You know, think of media queries as like a conditional statement you have in JavaScript. Think of a CSS equivalent of that where, depending on some state being true, any styles that you have specified will just come to life. So what I want to do here is specify a media query that says, in this particular mode, in this filled mode, I want to make my layout look a little different. I'm going to go to Style Rules panel. I'm going to say add style rule. Add media rule. And you can specify the query, you know, by yourself manually if you want to, but, you know, for the most part, it's hard to remember it. And we figured that if you're going to be using a media query, especially, you know, in a tool that's designed for Metro-style app development, you're probably going to be wanting to optimize for the various view states that we have. So lo and behold, we have a view state called filled. I'm going to go ahead and hit OK. And what I want to do here is I know that this fragment selector is what actually is the one that defines the actual layout of my content. I'm going to copy and paste that into my, okay. Let's just ignore that. Let's ignore that did not happen. Let's paste that in there. Okay, that worked. That worked. I'm going to guess the demo gods were just, you know, teasing me with that one. So I'm going to go ahead and select my fragment, and I am in filled mode. Yes. And now, if I were to change the size of this, sorry. I'm going to go to my CSS properties to make sure I'm actually in the right version of the filled property. So I didn't talk about this area much, but, you know, the applied styles rules list. You know, one thing about CSS is that what you see in the end isn't always, you know, that's not the whole story. You know, CSS cascades. It's like in the layers of the onion. It's like a beautiful collision of various properties and styles as they come together to show you what you finally see. And what we allow you to do, both from just a diagnosis point of view as well as a design point of view, is allow you to peel back the various layers, peel back all the various things that go on, so you can actually see where all your properties are coming from. So in this case, you know, for this particular item, I have a div element selected. You can see some of the values are provided by UI dark, and some are defined by what I've created. And what I really want to modify is the one that I created right now, the one with the at symbol, simplifying it's a media rule. I want to modify the style rule in this context, in the context of this particular default.css entry. So I'm going to click there right now. And now I'm going to go ahead and resize it. And notice immediately when I do that, you can see that the code modifies, you know, in the appropriate, you know, at media selector. And just to make sure that I did not clobber over anything else, if I were to go back to my landscape mode, go to landscape, you'll see that everything looks fine here. And everything is, you know, laid out just the way it was supposed to. And I go into filled, things are looking okay. And now let's talk about snapped and portrait. I'm gonna be less verbose in describing what's going on because, you know, one of the nice things about Blend is that once you get a good feel for how to do something, it can be very productive very quickly without having to spend a lot of time, you know, doing some like minor tweaking. So in this case, I'm gonna go much faster at media rule. I'm gonna say I'm in portrait mode. So select full screen portrait. Just like before, I'm gonna copy my fragment, like my fragment. I'm gonna use the context menu, paste it in here, go to my CSS properties panel, make sure that I have my fragment selected and that I am currently in the fragment that is targeting. Sorry, I think I may have, what did I do? See, here's the danger of going really fast is that you make mistakes. And I made a mistake here. It's actually full screen portrait. So let's jump ahead and go to the full screen portrait mode. All right, now we're good. Now we're cooking. So now we have the at media rule here. I'm going to go and say, in this case, the layout is off. I'm going to adjust it very quickly. And of course, I'm going to change this fixed sizing from 910 to, let's just say 50 FR. All right, this looks better. And just because I'm already here, make this perfectly centered. All right, and the last thing that's remaining is the snap view, which I was trying to do earlier, but you know, in my haste, did it incorrectly. So add at media role, go and add snapped, copy the fragment, and just paste it in here. All right, and make sure that I have my fragment selected, and make the change just like I did before. So similarly, 50 FR for the width of the grid, and then make the height of it look appropriate. And just to, you know, make sure that this is exactly what we were hoping to see, I'm going to hit F5 and just make sure that when I do go into snap mode, everything works just fine. Here's my okay. So, you know, this is actually by design, actually. So when I gave this demo a few weeks ago at Tech Ed North America, this actually happened. And, you know, I did the foolish thing of saying, I'm going to debug this live and see what's going on. So here's, you know, but the nice thing about this is that it kind of plays well with the theme I was talking about being able to use Visual Studio and Blend at the same time. So right now I ran my application and it crashed. And how I can figure that out is I'm just going to go ahead and say, you know, Blend has no debugging support built in. You know, if you have any code issues that are, you know, causing problems, you'll have no way of finding out what's going on. But fortunately, the workflow between Visual Studio and Blend is so good that I can just run my application from Visual Studio and see exactly where the issue is happening. I'm going to go ahead and hit F5. And the breakpoint should hit somewhere. Okay, so here's the thing. It says JavaScript runtime error unable to set property source of undefined or null reference. So I'm going to hit break. So what I'm going to do is stop my application. I'll just walk through exactly what's going on when I hit F5. Hitting F5. Okay, so let's see. Let's step into this. View state is 0, which is good. You know, we're in full screen. Let's go to the next line. My logo is null. There is no my logo object. So, and here's the reason why. By default, when you're running an application, you know, I made this assumption incorrectly that a DOM was fully loaded, that this image was fully loaded into memory. So all I really need to do to solve this is say, if my logo does not equal null, go ahead and run my application. So now, if we were to hit F5, my application shows up. And of course, the proper way of fixing it is not by doing this. It's actually by adding another listener that actually listens for the DOM content loaded or the equivalent event that actually makes sure that my full document has loaded. But you know, at least now that I have this fixed, if I were to go back to Blend, you know, yes, please reload, and then I hit F5, you'll see that everything should work just as well because, like I said, the exact same project files are being used by both Blend and Visual Studio. So see, you can see Blend, your application runs, and all of that. If I were to go into this mode, you can see that, you know, my application resets properly, and, well, this is actually a bad view of it, but now you can see that things look a little better. Not sure why that's doing that, but we'll just, you know, deal with that one separately. But so here I have my application, here I have it running, and all of that. And so, as I will show you, you can actually design for devices very predictably and, you know, productively in Blend by just using the device panel to emulate all these views. And similarly, you can also emulate various resolutions. You know, by default, like I showed, we are running at 1360x768, but you can actually run your application across various resolutions, especially once you scale your UI. So in this case, I'm running, you know, I have an option for 1920x1080, but it's on a small screen, so we scale everything by 40%, and you have that 140% scale. So when I click that, you can very quickly see that, you know, okay, here's my UI in a higher resolution. I can tell that the Windows logo has gotten much smaller, but things look reasonably good. I can go to 180, and similarly, things look just fine. And that's really by design. You know, the whole feature for being able to zoom your UI in by 40 and 80% wasn't really built to break your UI. A lot of work was done to make sure that, you know, your UI is gonna, we're gonna do our best to make sure your UI looks as good as it can while still being touchable, but you don't have to spend too much time, you know, designing it or doing something really crazy. The only times you might wanna do that is, let's say I wanna view my, you know, application on a large screen where the DPI is still gonna be a very reasonable number. So in this case, I have a resolution of 2560 by 1440 at a scale of 100. So when I do that, you can clearly see that, okay, so here's definitely some cases where, you know, I have a lot of empty space. I could do some work to make it better, but, you know, I'm not going to do that right now. But you get the picture that you can very easily simulate all of that and preview all these modes, you know, within just a few minutes. So instead of having to spend a lot of time, you know, fiddling with hardware, fiddling with various, you know, devices, you know, we give you a very predictable, very easy way of, you know, putting your application to a state that your users will also see when they're in your application. So with that, you know, that's really the crux of this demo. Are there any questions before I start, moving on towards the tail end of my slides? Anybody? Okay, question in the back. Unfortunately, I could not hear you. Can you shout? Okay, the question was, how easy is it to add support for gestures in there? Blend currently does not provide that support. But what you can do, though, is if you want to deploy as your simulator, and let's do it right now, you have full support for gestures in that particular mode. So unfortunately, you don't get the interactive mode type support where you have a gesture to navigate your app into a particular state and then being able to navigate and do various things. But you do have the ability to still be able to preview it using a simulator. So it's launching. It always takes some time. And here you can actually hit the various keys for, pinch, zoom out mode, and do the various gestures that you want. My app doesn't use any gestures in any clever way, so it won't do anything, but you can definitely use a simulator to get touch support. And of course, you also have the ability to connect to a remote device. In Visual Studio, you can actually say, I have my tablet device here, have I tethered or hooked up in some form. I can connect remotely to it and actually be able to use an actual device with the VS debugger running, so I can use a real gesture on a real device if I really wanted to as well. So you have many ways of doing that, and one day we hope that Blend will give you an interactive mode, the ability to do that as well. But no plans that we can talk about publicly just yet. So any more questions? All right. So that was a large part of my demo. So now let's go ahead and just talk about just a summary of where we are, what we're doing, and all of that. So we covered a lot of ground. Move that, but I showed you this right here. So I feel like it's worth just to backtrack a bit, just to talk a little bit about what are some of the things that we saw, what are some of the things that are emphasized that I did not really call out especially. So I figured the best way to do that is to talk about, my five favorite features in the product. And I'm not saying this because, and just to be, fair, I did not work on most of these features, so it's a completely unbiased opinion for me. So first of all, the best thing that I like is that, it's an accurate design surface that runs your app's HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And like I mentioned before, we use the exact same rendering engine that your application uses at runtime. And like you saw with the demo where I went from one view state to another, is there any Windows APIs that get toggled as a result of what you need to do? We toggle that for you. We give you the, your JavaScript runs, it's live. And the, here's Expression Web, which, with the latest patch, is a great, great tool for making HTML5 websites. And here's what your application looks like when I were to open just a default template. And here's the exact same application as it looks like in Blend. I mean, the difference is very simple. HTML and CSS is all great, but without JavaScript, you really don't get the rich look and feel that you have. So a tool that, like Blend, is pretty much crucial for being able to design your app because you can only do so much looking at static markup and static CSS. You really need the ability to style dynamic content, and only a live rendering engine like what we provide really allows you to do that. Second, clean and predictable HTML and CSS. One of the reasons why I kept the part of the UI up the whole time that showed you your HTML and CSS, I heard an applause, or maybe I'm imagining it, but I'll take what I can get, is that we really want to create production quality markup because, like I mentioned, I personally definitely feel that a visual design tool makes you more productive when building applications like this. And using Notepad, which I use sometimes as well, has its advantages, but we want to minimize those. We want people to say, I can visually design my tool and not have to worry about the markup being bloated, being confusing, and all of that. And so we work really hard to make sure that the HTML and CSS we generate using the visual tools is exactly what you would write if you were to do it manually. And if you see anything otherwise, please let us know. We'll definitely want to fix it. And another part is, I don't even bring this up as the main point, but we very seamlessly give you the ability to work with fragments, controls, and templates. You can just design them any way you want, and behind the scenes, we do the right things. You don't have to, fully understand the full control model to be able to style a control, for example. Knowing about it definitely helps. It definitely gives you more ability to know what you can and what you cannot do. But for the most part, if you're a designer, if you're just working on making a visual design change, we seamlessly give you the ability to do all of this. And fourth, this is probably my favorite feature, is the interactive mode I showed you, because so many of the applications you build are JavaScript driven, and so much of the visuals you see, what you see at runtime, are also driven by JavaScript. And having a way to get there in a way that doesn't quite, have to do with the Microsoft approach, but a way you might have built your application is absolutely fantastic. So it doesn't matter how you built your application, what kind of JavaScript library you use with jQuery, no problem. As long as your app at runtime can get into that particular state, we will get you there in Blend itself, and you can exit that mode and be able to select it, style it, and work with it just like you would otherwise. So I think this is probably my favorite feature of them all. And of course, the last thing, which I showed you several times, is excellent integration with Visual Studio. You can use it for visual design tasks and Studio for coding. And as you saw before, some of the strengths really are highlighted. You know, you do not have a visual design surface in Visual Studio for making your HTML Metro applications. And you don't have a debugger in Blend. And you can see the, you know, the interplay between them is extremely useful in making, you know, an application work. So for example, if it's only using Blend, it would take me a lot more effort to debug why my application was crashing at launch. But because, you know, we work well with Visual Studio, I can use some of the strengths that Visual Studio has and be able to have a working application. So with that, you know, I hope you found the session useful. You can contact me in all of these various ways. And if you have any questions, oh, of course, you know, I've been told to remind everyone to please fill out your session evaluations. The internet should be working right now, or it was working about an hour ago. No idea what it is doing right now, but, you know, we'll just, you know, flip a coin and see. So with that, you know, thank you.